Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I keep on reading this analysis that, well, you know, Trump's got support from, like, working folks. Really?
Right on. Like,
this is the guy you want to be
championing? Right on.
Working people?
Power the people.
This guy who spent 70 years on this earth showing no concern for working people.
Bring it all down, man.
This guy's suddenly going to be your champion?
Yeah, man.
I mean,
right on.
He spent most of his life trying to stay as far away from working people as he could.
You mean like you?
And now this guy's going to be the champion of working people.
Yeah, huh? Right on.
I mean, he wasn't going to let you on his golf course.
Oh, you know about that.
He wasn't going to let you buy in his condo.
You know about that.
And now suddenly this guy's going to be your champion?
Yes. Yes. See, he's in trouble. So they bring out Goofball because he's very popular amongst the welfare class. And he goes to Philly to the welfare rally. And now he's railing on Trump's appeal to the working class because they're worried. Even the Democrats are smart enough to know that Hillary doesn't appeal to anyone except the grifter class. How many grifters can there be in the country? The medical class, the grifter class, the illegal alien class, the Dumbo class. So he knows that the appeal of O-Trumpo is to the working class, the blue-collar white man who's been crapped upon by Obama for 8 straight years. Now, I'm going to talk about that a little bit today. But I want to begin with a story that caught my eye. Navy Secretary defends his unusual picks for ship names. I said, well, okay, no, please, no. Please know, Navy Secretary Wacko Mabus has raised a few eyebrows with some of the names he has picked for naval ships. So he's named Navy ships for Harvey Milk, gay activist, John Lewis, black activist, Cesar Chavez, Hispanic activist, and Medgar Evers. Now, I'm asking you something. What do you think I mean by scorched earth? Do you think it's rational to name fighting ships for radical social liberals, irrespective of what you think of them politically? A warship is supposed to, by its name alone, should make the Navy people on that boat proud to be on it. Are you telling me that everyone who joins the Navy wants to be on a Harvey Milk ship? It's going to be a laughing stock. Straight guys don't want to serve on the Harvey Milk. People who oppose illegal aliens and love America don't want to serve on the Cesar Chavez. So what am I saying to you? The ships should be named after service members honored for valor to inspire their crews. Why would you name ships after these radical leftists? Why? Why don't they just name a ship after Peyton Manning? I think next, Mr. Mabus under Obama should name a ship for Edgar Snowden or Peyton Manning. Or he can go even further than that. So what do I mean by scorched earth? This is what I mean by scorched earth. He's indelibly branding America a crazy nation, a loser nation, a psychotic leftist nation. This madman in the White House might order his Navy secretary, why does he stop with Harvey Milk or John Lewis and Cesar Chavez? Why does he not name the next Navy ship for, let's say, Mao Zedong, the Chinese madman who killed 60 million of his fellow countrymen? And wait, and while he's at it, why does he name a Navy ship for Joseph Stalin, another socialist? After all, he was revered by many. He's popular again in some parts of Russia. So you see what I'm saying by scorched earth? Do you get it yet? Do you understand what I'm trying to get at? Now, speaking of my book, which is doing great, it's going to be in the top 5 of the new hardcover bestsellers on the first week of the New York Times list. That's without one appearance on any of the hags on Fox News. I am blacklisted by your friends at Fox News. I am blacklisted by ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC. I understand that, but I shouldn't be blacklisted by Fox. There's no way that should be happening. They are a deceitful network. I thought when Roger Ailes was thrown out for the sexual things, they would come to their senses, but they're really, they're not that at all. But we're doing well without them. How? How? With the Drudge Report, with this audience primarily, with the Drudge Report, with the Alex Jones Show, a few other shows. That was it. And how could it be doing so well? Because it's a good book. Here's a review. Excellent and important book by the wittiest wordsmith in America, says Giles on the Charles River. Savage writes like he speaks, and his punchy colloquial style is among the best I've ever read. Savage's greatest gift is his ability to not only discern complex patterns on the macro level, but see their inexorable outcomes and simplify and communicate this to the average Joe. And in a way that is entertaining and memorable, and always with a clever turn of phrase. Thank you, Giles. Because that's really what I do. It's that simple. You know, I was on a show yesterday. I can't run the tape because he's on a competing network. I understand that. I was on the Alex Jones Show. And he's a great guy. He's one of the young Turks. And he'll be around long after I am gone from the media. Because he's a lot younger than I am. But, you know, he treated me with such deference and such respect. I realized why young men like that are successful. This morning I was interviewed by a wonderful young man in his 30s who broadcasts on Sirius. And he writes for Breitbart. Wonderful guy. Alex is a great guy. Again, with deference and respect. The young conservatives understand what's going on. They look up to those who've been around doing it a long time, and they don't try to step on them and crush them. So there is hope. Believe me, there's some young guys out there who are fighting for all of us. Now, I open up the newspaper this morning, meaning the websites. That's my newspaper. I almost fell out of my chair again. Remember I told you yesterday Obama's like a heroin addict, that no matter what he does, whatever outrage he gets away with, because there's virtually no opposition, he then has to raise the drug, the dose of the drug, the next day, the next week, the next month, to get a kick. It's like with drugs, right? You take a shot, you get a high. The next shot, if it's the same amount of the drug, you don't get the high, so you have to have more drug. Obama's a junkie. He's an outrage. He's an insult junkie. So he gets high off what he does, and there's no opposition, so he has to now raise the outrage level. I open a website. Obama administration demands, not asks for, demands 30% boost in refugees. I said, this can't be true. Secretary of Hate John Kerry and other so-called corrupt officials told Congress that President Rotten Obama wants the U.S. to take in 30% more refugees in 2017. He delivered the announcement along with so-called Homeland Security. That's Jay Johnson, the fellow who gave you Orlando and a few other terrorist attacks and didn't stop them. And Health and Human Services officials, those are the people who looked the other way as Obama waved in people with Zika and other illnesses. The Obama administration's 2017 target number is 110,000 refugees, up from 85,000 in 2016 and 70,000 in 2015. No number was given for Syrian Muslims, but 30,000 of them, 30,000 more of them, could be forced down the throats of America. Do you know what he's doing to this country? Why is he jamming so many Muslims into the country? Why is he not permitting in any Christians from Syria? Why is he bringing in immigrants from Iraq, Bhutan, Myanmar, and Congo? Why? Because he said he would transform America into what? Tell me what he's transforming it into, a better nation or a worse nation? Is this what you came to this country for? I'm asking you out there, those of you who have spent a lot of your lives trying to get out of your hellhole, your third world garbage pail. Did you come here to have your garbage pail follow you behind? No, you didn't come here to have a garbage pail trail you into this country. You came here to have a new life. Now you know what the election is about. Do you understand what it's about? Now, of course, we have a problem. A big problem. And that's a huge problem. We know that Donald Trump is a flawed vessel. We know that Donald Trump is a social liberal. We hope that Donald Trump has a scintilla of conservatism left in him should we push him over the finish line. That's all we can say in generalities. But I'm not going to be one of these never-Trumpers who bashes him for 18 hours in a row, as is going on across the media landscape right now. What are you doing? You're working for Hillary. You're taking people who might elect him and saying, go vote for Hillary. That's what you're doing. I'm not going to go there because he's the only hope we have right now. As flawed as he is, as liberal as he is on social levels, I'm not going to tell you any other thing I'm not going to tell you he's the perfect candidate. He is not. Now, about April 6th, 2016, Salon, the liberal intellectual Salon, wrote an article, the talk radio godfather of Trumpomania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class. It was a seminal article. It set off shockwaves because it was written by a liberal writer, and he actually touched the core of my show and of Trump's success. America's white working class. Those are the Eddies I write about in Scorched Earth. You know who the Eddie is? See, I'm trying to explain who Eddie is, the man who can save this country. Eddie is the guy who in World War II put down his pipe wrench, put down his saw, put down his hammer, put down his accounting machine, lawyers, even doctors. But it was largely the working white class who left America, sailed overseas, and defeated Superman. It was Eddie, the average man, who defeated Superman. Eddie was your grandfather, wasn't he? And then your father was the guy who got injured or killed in the jungles of Vietnam. Now here you are, the majority population in America being crapped upon by grandma and by the illegitimate who hate you to your core. They despise you, the white working class. They fear you and they hate you and they spit on you. Now along comes this slick millionaire from New York City and he says he speaks for you. Although you know he is not like you in any way, at least he was speaking for you. Is that correct? You didn't ask him to wear dirty overalls in order to speak for you. You didn't ask him to carry a lunch pail down from his towers to speak for you, did he? Did you? Did he have to carry a lunch pail and wear dirty overalls to speak for you? He did not. At least you had a voice. Someone recognized you are alive. Someone recognized that your jobs were shipped overseas by Bill and Hillary Clinton when they ruled America with an iron shoe. That's right. They exported your factories with your jobs. Now you wake up and you got the greedy pigs like Mark Zuckerberg. No amount of money on earth is enough for the nowhere man Zuckerberg. So what does he do? He rigs the system so that the illegitimate administration permits him to bring in as many Indians as possible into this country to steal the jobs of IT workers in America because they'll work for $30 an hour while a legitimate IT worker in the Bay Area has to make $70, $80 an hour to live here. And they were making $80 an hour or more. And then along came Zuckerberg, for whom the bell has not tolled. $58 billion is his fortune, not enough for him. Wants more. What, he couldn't live on $30 billion if he took in fewer H-1B visa workers? So those are the people we are talking about. When we say America's white working class, we're not just talking about Appalachia. We're not talking about Dayton, Ohio. We're not talking about factory workers. We're talking about blue-collar guys who are wearing white collars today. Do you understand what that means? An IT worker today is a blue-collar worker of yesterday. Do you understand that their jobs are being gutted? Trump says he's going to fix that. Well, I don't know if he can or if he will. I know this, and I got to say it to you again. He's the only choice we have. What other choice do we have? Voting for her or not voting at all? You want to be a complete moron and not vote? You're going to follow that advice? Don't vote for him because he's not pure enough? The purity test. Not kosher enough. Not kosher enough for the world. Are you kosher enough for the world? Do you know any man on earth who's pure? Do you know any politician who's pure? I don't. Am I pure? No. I do the best I can. I try to follow my own advice. I try to practice what I preach. Do I meet the mark every day? No. I try my best. And that's all we can hope for from Mr. Trump. And that's coming to you from the talk radio godfather of Trump-a-mania, Michael Savage, whose new book, listen to me carefully, this is very important, Scorched Earth, was written with two ideas in mind. One, to convert the undecided, those who actually think grandma speaks for them. And two, and this is the most important part, for if Trump wins, then the work begins. We know that more today than we did 2 days ago. We have to have a plan of action for the Trump campaign. And we have to yell and scream at his rallies, no, you won't. You said this. It's in Michael Savage's book. And you're going to do this. And that's why I wrote the book. And that is the opening to the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All you guys who go to NASCAR, you are hated by Hillary Clinton. Obama laughs at you behind your back. He spits at you. Him and his goons in the White House, they laugh at you. They spit at you behind your back. They don't need you anymore. They know that you hate them. They don't need you. So he's replacing you with Syrians, with Hondurans, with diseased people. Doesn't matter who. As long as they can vote, what does he care? You're the garbage. You're the America's white working class. You're garbage to them. Do you know that he thinks you're garbage? You don't know that. But you're also garbage to the general number of Republicans, the elites. We're not talking about Alaskans. You've been betrayed by the Republicans. You know that. You know why they have betrayed you, like Nancy Pelosi has. Because they want to cash in on their public service to make fortunes in Congress as lobbyists, doing the bidding of big business, even of foreign interests. They push global trade deals that dismantled tens of thousands of factories and idled you. What about the banks? Wells Fargo, the woman who just left, made $120 million in the Golden Parachute after she built hundreds of millions of investors of money. Did you hear that? I'll tell you that in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
From a certain religion that hates everyone else on the planet, either wants to convert them or kill them. That's all. It's that simple. No, it's not xenophobia. It's the zen of survival. Gallup poll just came out. American trust in the news media falls to the lowest level in history. I'm coughing because I ate nuts. I swore off nuts. I never should eat them at all, but never should during a show. It's like crazy. I don't know why. I got hungry. Now I'm choking to death. Please get me some water. I need to hydrate myself or I'm liable to lose a shoe and step off a curb. It's a klempt. Gallup poll, American trust in news media falls to lowest level in history. Wolf Blitzer, are you listening, you stinking lowlife, you? You know, Wolf, a guy like you symbolizes the worst in the news media. You know why? Because you have a trustworthy face. Gray hair, the owl-like look, the glasses, the blinky. You blink a lot to show you're trustworthy. People hate you. They look right through you. They see the vampire behind the glasses. You're a shanda to the Blitzer family. You're a shanda to the Jewish people. Blitzer, do you know what you are? You're the antithesis of the Bible. Gallup poll, American trust in news media falls to the lowest level in history. Confidence in fairness and accuracy sinks to a new low. And the same goes for the other one, Jake Tapper, another one they dug up, or the one they grew a beard for, the one that from NBC, the beard they got him, Chuck Todd, a genius. Another genius they dug up. Wasn't pulling numbers, so they grew a beard for him and gave him glasses. Okay, let me go and not go into it. I'm good at being sarcastic. I'm not in the mood. So we can name ships now for Cesar Chavez, the Harvey Milk, the John Lewis. This is what I mean by permanently blemishing the United States of America with a scorched earth social policy. And then a new oil tanker is going to be named by Obama for the abolitionist Sojourner Truth. That's good. That should help recruit people into the Navy. Oh, yeah, I want to join the Navy and serve on the Harvey Milk. Okay? Now, let's move on a little bit. I want to go back to this very important article in Salon that should not be forgotten. It came out in April. It set off shockwaves because it's a left-wing magazine, or let's say liberal, by Robert Henley, the talk radio godfather of Trump-a-mania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class. And he says some things that I have to repeat to you. Long before Trump's arrival on the scene, it was conservative radio talk show host Michael Savage, the ideological godfather of Trumpism, who galvanized this insurgency. Savage gave it a voice and a powerful narrative, one that proved extremely helpful to those, his words coming now, like iconoclastic Senator Ted Cruz, who rose to prominence taking on the very same GOP Beltway insiders that Donald Trump is now making so nervous. He writes, years before Trump, Savage had already redefined the nature of the American political landscape when he blew up the Republican Party establishment's hold on its working class base. Trump can come or go, but this insurgency has a depth and breadth that can't be ignored. Now, you got to hear the rest of this. I've been a long time listener to Savage. This is from a liberal intellectual, because I think that as a journalist, you risk being blindsided if you ignore someone to whom millions of your fellow Americans are tuning in. I saw the rise of Trump coming several months ago, he writes, precisely because I know how deep the support runs in so much of America for Savage's nativist mantra, that the very survival of the nation is threatened by the erosion of our, quote, borders, language, and culture. So here is a liberal, a true liberal, who understood what I was saying. And he says, Savage's Savage Nation is a kind of sanctuary. In his running commentary, he's gone after the duopoly of Republican Democratic elites. While Trump was still playing nice in polite society and donating money to Democrats, Savage was building a huge audience, skewering political correctness, and going after what he perceived as the excesses of both parties. I could read the rest, but you can read it for yourself. Then he goes into the fact that Savage is a raconteur with roots in New York City where he grew up. He is a best-selling New York Times author, has a master's degree in medical anthro and a PhD from the University of California, Berkeley in epidemiology and nutrition science. He says he's an avid conservationist and animal lover, yet dismisses global warming as a hoax. All perfectly true. His extemporaneous musings about his daily comings and goings, his 11-pound poodle, Teddy, and about his days growing up in working-class New York are poignant and display a rich emotional arc. Unlike his right-wing colleagues that rant on politics exclusively, Savage's dynamic range makes him engaging company, which is true. He can talk to listeners about what he had to eat and drink the night before, and in the process share the vicissitudes of growing older with millions intimately. I am growing older. He's speaking to you and only you, especially if you fit his key demographic. The disaffected white conservative voter. Back in a flattering 2009 New Yorker profile, Savage's show was described as, quote, one of the most addictive programs on radio and one of the least predictable. Okay, so we'll stop right there. He then refers to the Dubai Ports World Deal, which I pioneered an opposition to. He heard that back in 06, this writer, when he was a reporter for National Public Radio. And he said Savage was the one who ran the charge against the Dubai Port Deal, and Bush was trying to push it. Here's what he wrote. I have to read this. Even as the rest of the media was stumbling around to flesh out the details of the port deal, Michael Savage was charging to the air like a 21st century Paul Revere, dubbing the deal Portgate, and urging his millions of loyal listeners to take to the ramparts and loudly register their disapproval. The globalists had to be stopped. Each day, Savage turned the heat up on the Beltway, recounting how the sell-off of another critical piece of U.S. infrastructure to Arabs was being facilitated by lobbyist traders from both parties. The Washington Post reported that Dubai Port World was enlisting the likes of former Senator Bob Dole and former Congressman Tom Downey and his wife, former EPA Administrator Carol Brown, are both Democrats. And then he talks about how the Bush administration had done nothing about it. By the time Savage was done hammering the Bush administration over Portgate, the White House's only refuge was to say President Bush was only aware of the deal after it was approved. In the end, Savage prevailed and the Dubai Ports World went packing. For the swelling ranks of the Savage Nation, that was the beginning of the end for the Bush brand of mercantile republicanism. Savage, elected by nobody, had moved the nation and stopped the deal that all the smart money was convinced would sail through. He had undermined a sitting Republican president with a big chunk of the base that had elected him. So you understand what I'm saying to you. That's the base that I call the Eddies. That's the base that Donald Trump has tapped into. That's the base that's listening to the show. That's the army that I need to go into the bookstores today and tomorrow and over the next 2 weeks and clean the shelves out and give it to someone in your family or your workplace who does not know the danger that we are in. It's that simple. Now, there's some news here that is even more fascinating than what I've already read you. The Navy, the DOD secretary, that lunatic, Ashton the Crazy Carter, a physics professor from MIT, a schmuck, a complete doofus moron, a college teacher, is made the head of the DOD. He says in Silicon Valley he'll be flexible on marijuana use in the military. Why not heroin? Why not give out heroin to the frontline troops, Carter? I mean, that would be very liberal. Let them line up and shoot up before going to war. After all, you're a social machine, aren't you? You're a social engine. You're not a fighting engine anymore. Here's another one. Al-Qaeda urges black Americans to convert to Islam. Threatens more attacks. Really? That's a nice one. They want African Americans to convert to its extremist form of Islam. Well, I hope African Americans who are listening to this understand something and understand it very clearly. This is a fact. This is not made up. Who sold your ancestors into slavery? Who is it who traded your poor ancestors and put them on those horrible ships? Why, it was Arab slave traders who were Muslim. You want to practice the religion of the oppressors of your ancestors? Yeah, well, go ahead. Then listen to Al-Qaeda. That's just what you should do. Robert, did we have a soundbite of that recruiting tape? No? I don't even know if I should run it. Well, let's start it, see if we can take it on the show. Go ahead.
In order to recruit the best engineers in the world right now, you need to be a bit flexible. Let's say somebody wants a Bernie.
That's the marijuana one. I want the Al-Qaeda recruiting of black Americans to become radical Muslims. That's what I want to hear. If we have it, I don't know. If not, forget about it. It doesn't matter. I've been up since 6 in the morning. I did 2 shows this morning. I did the KSFO morning show. Then I did a SiriusXM Breitbart show with Alex. Now I'm doing this for 3 hours. After the show, I'm going to do a KLIF interview. I never had more energy. You know, energy begets energy. It's a strange phenomenon. The more you do, the more you can do. It's a little trick I want to tell you about for those of you who are struggling, trying to succeed in anything. Don't give up and don't become lazy. Laziness creates more laziness. Did you know that? And you become slothful. The less you do, the less you can do, the less you want to do. The more you do, the more you can do. So even if you're not currently working, let's say where you want to be working, so you hate your job, but you're looking forward to something else, well, whatever you do, man, just do more. Do more of it. Work more. Take another job. Do whatever you have to do. Work 2 jobs. Because it'll keep you going until you move into, or go to school, if that's what's going to get you out of it. I don't know what kind of school you can go to today, which will yield anything, when I see what they're giving them in schools today. I have a listener who sent me a link. She goes to a junior college. A link, in American history, they're forcing them to read comic books that came out of the, they look like the ex-Soviet Union comic books, or those type of comic books that were produced by the Castro murderers in Cuba to brainwash the peasants. That's what they're doing to the college kids. I looked at the comic book that they're making them read in this college. I was shocked. It shows every panel showing a white person shows an angry, hateful panel. Every minority that is shown in this cartoon is shown as an oppressed individual who is oppressed by the white person. The hatred against whites has to be stopped. You have to fight back. You can't let your daughter take this garbage from these evil communists in the colleges. That's one of the things I want to work on. I got another report. A white girl's going to a college in a community college. That's where they really kill them in L.A. She's the only white girl in a class. All the rest are Mexicans, blacks. And the whole class is about how evil whites are. The girl's coming home crying every night. She's crying. She's in tears every night. She said, I didn't do anything wrong. My father's in the military. He's almost given his life. My mother's a nurse in the military. Well, what do you mean I'm evil? Where'd this come from? And who's the teacher? An evil white woman, communist, hater of America. We have to fight back. We can't take this passively anymore. So these are some of the things I have to warn you about that I want to be talking about over the next couple of months and years, even. No matter what the outcome of the election is, we have to fight back against the illegitimate left. They're destroying an entire generation of white kids. They're destroying their self-esteem. They're bullying them. You know, I love all these ads for bullying. So you think bullying is only about gays? How about bullying white kids by yelling at them and telling them about white privilege, which doesn't exist, damn it? It's all being done to destroy an entire generation of white children, to break them and destroy them. This is very serious business. This is not about rhetoric. This is about the survival of an entire race. There's almost a... I have to be very careful how I attach the word to the word genocide. There's a psychological genocide being practiced against white kids today in colleges. Let's put it that way. A psychological genocide against white kids in colleges. I know you... I'm resonating with you. I get it. You know that this is going on. So the battle has been going on a long time. I've been at it for many years. Others have been at it for many years. And we're losing. We haven't won this battle. We won some battles. I mean, I can name 3-4 battles I've won. Dubai Ports deal was one, which I just read to you as a big one, when Bush tried to turn port security in 9 of our seaports over to the people in Dubai because there was money in it for the Republican lobbyists. Can you imagine how debased the Bush administration really was? So you say, what, I'm Johnny come lately, why didn't you say it then? I did. I wasn't a fan of Bush. That's why his brilliant wife, Laura, who ran the book. You see, each first lady takes on a cause. Laura Bush, her cause was books and libraries. Now, here I was, a best-selling conservative author. She never referred to any of my books. Here I am, a best-selling author. I have Scorched Earth, Last Woman's Government Zero, The Others, Stop the Coming Civil War. A good portion of Trump's campaign comes from my writings. Has he ever referred to any of these books at his rallies? Why not? Oh, my friends, the answer is in the wind.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is a fact that I'm going to ask you a question. Bookstore stories. What's happened when you've gone in as a Savagette? What is your favorite passage from Scorched Earth? Have you read it yet? Scanned it. What gave you hope? What stirred you? What made you want to tell someone what you read? I mean, let's talk about the words in the book. It's only number 13 right now amongst all books on Amazon. It's number 1 amongst politics. That you should know. But amongst all books, and that means reprints, fiction, nonfiction, paperback, hardcover, it's number 13, and I'm up against huge opposition. People who have blacklisted me from Fox News because they're competitors in the book world. They're doing very well because they own the outlet. Okay, that's the way business works. I get it. I'm not asking for fairness. I'm thrilled that I can even still write a book that gets this far up on the list. It'll be in the top 5 in new hardcover. It's a big deal for me. You know, I laid in bed last night and I said, Michael, do you know how far you've come? When I grew up, Hemingway was one of my heroes. I'll give you an example, Ernest Hemingway. So I used to see pictures of him in Life magazine, a shirt off, burly guy, hairy chest, big guy, fishing, you know, hunting, the women in the tents, the whole thing, the booze, the airplane crashes. He was my role model. I've done some of it. I've not been in any plane crashes, and I'm not a boozer, nor any of the other stuff. I don't even fish, for that matter. But as a role model, he did inspire me to a great extent. Those books never sold this kind of number. If Hemingway sold 50,000 books in hardcover, that would have been a huge sale in his day. I don't know, the dynamics of everything has so changed today that no matter what you achieve, it doesn't seem like you've achieved anything. There's always like, oh, how come I didn't do this? How come I didn't become that? It's very difficult in this country, even when you succeed. Did you know that? I really want to go into, actually rather talk about that. Success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success, as Eugene O'Neill wrote. I really want to talk about that. That's what I really rather talk about, rather than the Trail of Tears.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
It's hour two. I wanted another Joan Baez from the 60s. I was going to make a comment about how the people who destroyed America in the 60s, spitting on our troops as they came home from Vietnam, are now fundamentally in the White House, in the media, in academia, and in government. In other words, the vermin, the anti-American vermin, took over the country and destroyed the country. So can we find the proper Joan Baez to start? It's not your fault, Robert. I was busy eating. What's this here? this one. That's horrible. You play it out. Let's see. No. Yap. All right, so she was a minstrel of the left, along with Bob Dylan and the others, who told us how bad America was, how bad soldiers were, how bad the white man was, how bad the military was, how bad the police were. And they were marginal, outsiders. Now they're running the world. And so while they're running the world, it can't happen here, is happening here. Obama's invading his own nation with Syrian Muslims, for example. He is permitting the most dangerous, subversive organizations in the United States to run the country. He has practiced and permitted his minions to practice a form of corruption never seen in American history. Boss Tweed was a piker compared to what John Kerry has become. Did you read the story about John Kerry? Handcuffs. Handcuffs would be too good for him. He funneled over $100 million of State Department money to his daughter's organization without any other bids. Handcuffs. How diversity is destroying democracy. How our ignorance of history permits America to melt down in front of our eyes. So anyway, I can go into every little chapter of Scorched Earth. You'll read it yourself. And I write about our future because that's the important thing. And I ask a question, is there a coming economic collapse? Is there a welcome revolution coming to America? And I close with the sleeping giant will awaken, how Eddie will save America. Now, many of you say there is no Eddie. There's no Eddie anymore. The imaginary Eddie that I think exists, the noble white man, the working class white man, you say he's gone? Tell that to the troops in the 101st Airborne. Tell that to the boys on a mountaintop in Afghanistan. Tell that to the cops on the corner. Don't tell me Eddie doesn't exist. He exists. He's just not in the White House. Instead, we have something else. We have Eddie has two fathers in the White House. So, no, Eddie exists. He just has no leadership. He's resonating with Donald Trump for right now until Trump continues to move so far to the left that he's finished. If he keeps doing the child care stuff and things like that, it's over with. He won't even get them to vote, I'll tell you right now. I don't know what happened here. What happened now seems to be moving him to the left faster than when the Republicans were running his campaign. I don't know. I don't know what's going on inside there. I'm not going to rail against it because then you'll think I'm just supporting Hillary, which I'm not going to do. But one more or two more body blows to the conservative base and they're not going to vote for him. They better listen to this show. I am why he got where he is. All the years he drove around New York in the limo and listened to the Savage Nation, he was learning. He was learning how to speak our language. He was learning how to sound like he was one of us. He was practicing. So now he's almost the president. Now what? Now you wake up and he's doing child care like the Soviet Union? What's tomorrow? What's going to come tomorrow? From the wall, suddenly it'll be like, I don't want to build a wall. I want to bring them in as many as we can and make them into conservatives. I don't know what tomorrow can bring. Anything's possible. So don't think I don't see what's going on. Believe me, I'm open-eyed about it. So there's a big, big struggle on our hands right now. The big, big Lebowski. The big one, the big Lebowski. Anyway, you know, I have in my hand here. Did I read this yet? My grandmother's English language book. I referred to it yesterday, right? I think I made reference to it. Listen to this. I was cleaning out a garage. And on the bottom of all of my books from my archives, I found the book, you'll never believe it, First Drill Book in Reading English by McAvoy from the 1940s. And it was from both of my grandmothers. One of my grandmothers gave it to my other grandmother. And you could see the handwriting of Fanny there. It's touching. I didn't know. You could see her trying to write in English. Because she came from Russia. She was a Russian language writer. And she was an intellectual, by the way. She was no peasant. She was very smart. But, you know, you go try to learn English. It's really a difficult language, incidentally. Of all the languages, it's one of the toughest. So when I talk to an immigrant who can't speak good English, I don't mock them. You know how I learned not to mock them? Because for my grandmothers. But more particularly, when I was a kid, I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was in my father's little store in New York on Ludlow Street. It was a funeral parlor right next to it, 137 Ludlow. It's a hipster bar now. Very funny, dancing on the graves. I told my father to buy the building. In the 50s, I said, buy the building. They couldn't afford it. They knew they should buy it. It's a hot area. Okay, it's been hot for years. So he had this little store, a marketplace. And we get all sorts of people coming in there. You know, the doctors from the Upper East Side would come down slumming, looking to snag a piece of gold mixed in with the other crap, thinking that the merchants didn't know what it was. And just hanging around. It was very busy, like a carnival on the weekends. So crowded you couldn't get in there. They'd walk. It was like Coney Island. We had tricks that we'd play on the customers to keep ourselves from going crazy. Tricks like he would nail quarters to the countertop. He would he was playful with me. He would solder a nail to the back of a quarter, and then he'd bang it into the countertop, which is made of wood. And he would say to me, "Watch, Michael, when the people come in today on Sunday, when it's crowded, he said, you're going to see people. I'll turn my back. You hang around outside. Watch as they try to steal the quarter when they think I'm not looking. I'll turn my back and watch what happens." So I'd hang around on the outside of the stall. And sure enough, the crowds would mill in, and there you'd see the people looking around, and they'd reach for the quarter, and it's nailed to the countertop. That way you had other little tricks, like the cane trick. I learned it from a Carney Barker who used to come, and he liked me. I remember it was a long cane made of the vertebrae of a certain animal. So the crowds jammed in there, and you're like shoulder to shoulder. I'd go out, he wouldn't do this, and I would tap a person as they're reaching in their pocket to like pay for something. It was very mischievous. I would, as they pulled the money out of their pocket, there were no credit cards in those days. It was cash and change, right? And people counted change out. Today no one does. Who counts change? So they'd reach for change, and as they pull it up from the pocket, I tap their foot. I'll give them a little tap on the front of the foot from behind. And they look down like they dropped a coin. And I used to love to, I used to love to see them looking on the floor for the coin that they didn't drop. So these were mild, mischievous things that I did as a kid. Well, in those days, I learned some serious stuff that was not so mischievous. We'd get people in from various states. They'd come in and buy the merchandise of my father. So once in a while, a black guy would come in, very well-dressed, white shirt and tie, nice jacket. He spoke very, very politely, and he came in. And he'd say to my father, "How much is that one?" He'd say, "800. He'd say, "Okay. How much is that one?" "700. Okay. How much is that one?" He bought all the statues my father had. And he would write out a check, and he'd come back and have his people pick it up. Now, you know, I was a young kid in New York. I didn't know that there were black people who had money. I swear to God, I didn't know. I had no. I knew there were fighters and baseball players. But I don't know. I'm a working class white kid. I had no association. And he said, "That man owns a very important antique store in the Carolinas. And he buys from me, and he takes it down there." And I said, "Well, why does he buy from you?" He said, "Because he sells it for more in North Carolina." I said, "Okay, that's the business. Just as my father bought from a wholesaler or an importer who brought it in from France, this guy would do that." So I learned something there. But more specific to the point of my grandmother's book, as an immigrant, I'll never forget Spanish-speaking people would come in, because there were a lot of Puerto Ricans in New York. Then they were brought in to work in the garment industry primarily. And New York was a big Puerto Rican hub. And a lot of these people did not speak good English. So I once mocked one of them, only once. When the man left, my father yanked me behind this counter. He said, "Listen to me. He speaks better English than you speak Spanish. Never forget that." And you know what? To this day, I never forgot that. So when I'm speaking to an immigrant today who may be from Guatemala or wherever, and I see him or her struggling to communicate with me in English, I don't find them stupid. I look down upon the person and say, "Oh, he's dumb because he can't speak English." Because I tried to speak Spanish. I studied it for 7 years, a very tough language for me. So you can learn from life 101 is what I'm saying to you. You get it? Learning from the real street thing is what it's all about. And that brings me back to the Eddies, the people who can save America. I really want my army of Eddies to stand up to all those who have ruined this country. Now, what do I mean? Do I mean an armed revolution? No, I don't mean that. I'm not talking about getting guns. That's stupid. That never gets anywhere. I know a lot of you like to quote, you know, the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed with blood. I see it all over the internet. It's nonsense. Because look what happened in Syria. Armed revolutions rarely work out for anybody. Everyone dies. And as I said on one of my interviews yesterday, I've studied the French Revolution. And what happened in the French Revolution is very telling for us today. And I talked about the guillotine as the most thirsty of all instruments. And in the beginning, the leftists, those who hated the bourgeoisie, pay attention, liberals, very careful, especially young progressives who don't know what you're talking about. So listen carefully. In the beginning, the revolutionaries kill all of the opposition with the guillotine, or however they do it. Now, of course, they kill us by banning us from Fox News, or banning us from CNN, or banning us from teaching in universities, or they commit the guillotine by not permitting us to speak on college campuses. That's a form of a social guillotine. But in the real case of real murder conducted by the revolutionaries in the French Revolution, so they killed as many of the middle class as they can get, the royalists, if you want to put it that way, the revolutionaries. But then the guillotine was still thirsty. So what happened next is what happened in the Soviet Union. What happened next is what happened under the Castros. After killing the opponents of the revolution, they started saying there were spies within their own people, and they started killing their own people. Castro killed most of the people who brought him to power. Did you know that? Stalin killed many of the people who brought him to power. They're paranoid lunatics. Most power-mad people are insane. And so then they kill the opposition, and they kill their own kind, and still the guillotine is thirsty. It wants yet more blood. And only when there's no one left to kill does the guillotine stop falling. So violence never works. Never does violence work. The only thing that can work is ideas. And that is why, my friends, I speak, and that is why I write. Who is it who said, "I think, therefore I am"? A long time ago when I read that in college, I changed it to, "I write, therefore I am." And then when I became a talk show host, I changed it to, "I speak, therefore I am."
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So I told you the tap story, the tapping, the nail on the quarter story. Those are new. I don't remember ever telling them on the show before as part of my learning experiences in life. Mischief is fun. The mischief is gone from America. Do kids even do that anymore? They sit on an Instagram showing their pubic parts to someone else when they're 9 years old? Would they even know how to use a hammer? If their father even showed them how to solder a nail to a quarter? Nobody can even solder anymore. But anyway, there it is. Let's go to Theo on WBOB in Jacksonville, Florida. Theo, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, passing through Jacksonville, man, and I heard the remark about air religion and why would we want to, as African Americans or black people, want to be Islamic or Muslims. And my question is, why would we want to be Christians?
I don't know. I can't tell anyone what they should want to be, but I think that part of that discussion should include the fact that the slave traders were Muslims. They were Arabs.
Indeed, they were. But we were basically treated in a manner that a Christian should never treat anybody, because we were treated inhumanely under Christians.
100% correct. But let me wait. So here's something that should be, not but, I'm not here to refute the reality of what you just said. I said something the other day to an African-American caller who said the same thing. We were historically abused. So I said, well, my ancestors probably were slaves in Egypt, but I don't hate Egyptians. I mean, when does it end? When does it end is what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. And slavery is nothing new. It didn't start with us. And, you know, but it was a different kind of slavery in this country under white Christian rule. You know,
and what I understand, but there's another element that probably you don't even know. Do you know that one of the first things the freed slaves did in America was build their own churches? Did you know that, Theo?
Yeah, because we were basically brainwashed to do it, because we were beat with the whip to accept the slave master's religion, because we couldn't.
All right, but I don't understand where you're coming from. You're saying Christians were bad to you. No one could argue with that.
Yeah,
but you're not saying Muslims were good to you, are you?
This is what I'm saying, and a lot of people avoid this fact. A lot of Africans who came over here were already Muslims. It wasn't just one stock and flock of Africans. You had different tribes.
So you're going to go along with what Al-Qaeda wants and become a radical Muslim in America? You think that's going to help your anyone else?
Can you repeat that one more time?
So you're going to listen to what Al-Qaeda is saying in their recruiting campaign? And join radical Islam here in America? I'm asking you point blank.
Not at all. I despise Al-Qaeda and anybody who thinks with that radical mind. But what I'm saying is, Christianity is not too much better when you look at it overall.
All right, I accept it. Now, in its historical day, Christianity was exactly like Islam. They killed people to convert them. You know that, right?
Oh, of course. They killed.
I mean, during the Inquisition was conducted by who? By Christians. They killed Jews. They tortured them. The Jews had to practice their religion in a hidden manner. If you weren't a Christian, they killed you. So, but they evolved past that to a modern Christianity, an evolutionary Christianity as it is today. And I haven't seen that occur in Islam. And even modern Muslims are saying that they need a reformist movement.
Yeah, but you have
I'm not against Islam. Islam in its pure form, detached from Muhammad's insane teachings and his indulgences in slavery and child rape, etc., as well known in historical fact, stripped of that, the religion is a beautiful religion. And it has given the world beautiful things, but this Wahhabist form of Islam is certainly a toxin, and it's coming from Saudi Arabia. Theo, let me send you Scorched Earth. I think that you're an open-minded man, and I appreciate that call. I loved it. It ended the way I wanted it to.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Whether you vote for me or whether you vote for someone else, I will be still your greatest champion, right? Our support comes from every part of America and from every walk of life. We have the support of cops and soldiers and carpenters and welders and accountants and lawyers, the young and the old, and millions of working class families all over this nation.
In other words, the Eddies that I'm talking about. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. And I want to read you what I wrote about the Eddies in the last two pages of Scorched Earth. Let me start with this. The change in America that you're noticing, the shift from complacency started with Donald Trump. It doesn't matter whether he's cynical or whether he's manipulating you to become it doesn't really matter. He awakened the sleeping giant. And the sleeping giant is going to affect the world. Going back to World War II, the Japanese realized that after they bombed Pearl Harbor, what they had done. One of the admirals said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that all they'd succeeded in doing was to awaken a sleeping giant and fill it with terrible resolve. And I used to call those citizens, these proud Americans, the Eddies of the world. Well, it's just a name, a common Christian name, but it embodies that which is the best in us. The Eddies who fought in World War II. The Eddies who put down their saws and ceased to be carpenters or electricians or farmers and went and fought the Nazi Übermenschen, the Supermen, as they called themselves. And every man who defeated that Superman will never forget it. Every man defeated Superman. Then when Eddie came home from winning World War II, he built the United States into the greatest country on earth in the 1950s, the greatest nation in the history of the world. Then along came the human plagues, the vermin I talk about, the shyster William Kunstler, the degenerate Allen Ginsberg, the drug peddler Timothy Leary, and Bella Abzug, who had her own special brand of feminist insanity. Then there were the militant Black Panthers, whom even Martin Luther King Jr. couldn't stand. And this group of evildoers, these left-wing drug peddlers and social polluters, destroyed the will of America. They twisted the entire American mind. Some people think the twisting started with the beatniks. Go, man, go, huh? With the bongo drums and the beards and the sandals. It didn't. They were basically harmless, reading poetry in coffee houses and on street corners. Even as a kid, I didn't pay much attention to them, but they were right about one thing. It went, man, it went. Those days are over. Goodbye, beatniks and socialists and degenerates. Now we have to pick up the pieces because Eddie is still here. You see, Eddie had children. Never forget it. And not all of Eddie's boys became girls. Not all of Eddie's boys went to Harvard. Not all of Eddie's boys went to NYU. Not all of Eddie's girls went to Columbia Law. Eddie's boys and girls are still in America, and they still have American values. Those people, those blue-collar families, are still the majority. They're still the backbone of this country. They didn't vote in the last presidential election because Barry Obama and Mittens Romney didn't speak to them. But I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that they're going to vote in this coming election. And when that sleeping giant, those former non-participants in the political process, finally elect their leader, you're going to see a change unlike any you've ever seen in your lifetime, whether you like it or not. They will vote because they'll finally realize that the West is being savaged from within by militant Islamists and secularists from the left. They will vote because if they do not, Christian beliefs will be stamped out and the West will be stamped out along with them. They will vote because they'll finally understand what John Adams, America's second president, was talking about when he said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." You are now hearing loud outcries against Donald Trump and the rising force Filetis. You're hearing them described as bigots, racist, anti-women, anti-Semites, and homophobic, and of course, most recently, deplorable. But those voices will eventually dim. The shouters will be reduced to the marginal characters that they've always been. They'll be put back into the boxes that they came from. How do I know this? Because the Eddies will come to our defense one more time. They will stand shoulder to shoulder to honor the legacy of those who built this nation, who fought its wars, who bowed in prayer in a rich variety of faiths, and who raised the families that are the backbone of America. And when they do, I can guarantee you that this nation, that this world, will be a safer place, even for the lunatic fringe. I'm Michael Savage. Those are the closing words to my last political book, Scorched Earth. I can't do any more than I've done. It's that simple. I've spoken from the heart. I've written from the heart. I've given it my all. The rest is up to the American people, which way they go. This is not about selling a book. This is about selling an idea, about selling a revolution. Have you been to your local bookstore to find the book? Did you have trouble finding Scorched Earth at the bookstore? How did the book clerks deal with you, Eddie and Edettes? Was the book front and center where it's supposed to be? Was it hidden? Did you buy multiple copies, one for yourself and one for your liberal wife or neighbor? Are you planning on carrying Scorched Earth to work? I wouldn't even ask you to take it on a bus or a subway because you'd probably be spit upon by the illegitimate left who has no chance of even understanding what a free nation means. But you can carry it to work. You can put it on your desk at work. Will you talk to people about the book and its message? I hope so. Has anyone confronted you because you carried the book around? And that's it. I mean, that's the whole story in a nutshell. WMAL, Steve, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I respectfully disagree with you about your views on violence. You have stated previously that liberalism is a mental disorder. I wholeheartedly agree with you. I don't understand how, if that is the case, that we can win in the arena of ideas when the only thing that they seem to understand is violence, sir. And, you know, there were...
I understand. Intellectually, you are correct. But now carry it to the next step. What are you calling for?
Well, what am I calling for? I'm not calling for anything. It's the other side that's calling for. And if you've been listening...
I agree. Obama uses groups like Occupy, like Black Lives Matter, like La Raza to intimidate the middle class of all races. I understand what violence looks like. We've seen it in Ferguson. We've seen it in Baltimore. We've seen it in Minneapolis. We know what violence is. We know what a communist revolution looks like. But if you feed it by fighting it, what will happen is you'll wind up with Syria.
Well,
I think what we need to do is empower our police again. I think we need to let them loose on these mobs. We need to let the police control these mobs. That's what they're supposed to do. In fact, that's what they're paid to do. Their job is to control the violence, not to provoke more violence.
Under Barack Hussein Obama, it's not going to happen. He's going to provoke the situation and pour gasoline on the fire. We're going to end up in a violent civil war.
So you're agreeing with my two-book-ago title, Stop the Coming Civil War, then?
Agreeing with you wholeheartedly. We can't stop it. It's here. You know.
I agree there is a civil war. I agree with you 1,000% that he's a maniac trying to start a shooting civil war in order to bring about an insurrection and could crush us all together. I understand where he's coming from. He's a devil. He is absolutely demonic. I get that. That doesn't mean we have to feed into it, does it?
Feeding into it is not what it's about. He's going to push us into it.
Okay, what will be the... Let me tell you, what's the match that's going to set it off?
Okay.
What will be our Fort Sumter?
There are several. Number one, enaction of martial law. Stealing the election, assassination of Donald Trump, forced vaccines and elimination of a cash system and adoption of a cashless system. These are just some Fort Sumter ideas that are going to happen.
Good. Well, you're a very well-versed individual. I assume that you are very, very carefully studying these things.
Well, one thing on...
I won't ask you the next question, which is, are you a member of an armed group?
Here's the thing. Whether I'm a member of an armed group or not, you know, yes, it's called the United States of American Patriots, yes. It's the whole nation, yes. We are an armed group, yes. I'm a member of an armed group, Gun Owners of America, yes. We all own guns, I'm a member of that group. Patriots, good people, yes. Christians, yes. Right-wingers.
So you're one of the deplorables that Grandma hates. Oh,
no doubt about it. I'm as deplorable as you can get.
Well, welcome to the Deplorable Club. It's an honor to be meeting you, Mr. Deplorable. I'm very proudly a member of the Deplorable Club. Do you think that Obama can be stopped before he does something so drastic that he provokes some type of horrible violence?
I do not believe so. He's already provoking horrible violence all over.
Well, he has, I know. If for him to take the thugs from Black Lives Matter into the White House is provoking violence. For him to shovel 10,000 Syrian Muslims down our throats, which, by the way, is an impeachable offense. Congress has the right to control immigration, not a dictator. The man is a dictator. He's an out-of-control, petty dictator who is trying to provoke an armed rebellion against it. I know what he's trying to do. But so far, no one's taken the bait, have they?
No, they haven't. I'd love to send your book to my liberal lesbian niece.
Liberal lesbian niece.
Yes.
Liberal lesbian niece. Why are so many gay people liberals? Can you explain that to me? You would think that by nature they should be conservative in light of the fact that so many of the Muslims that Obama's bringing in are not modern Muslims, but quite traditional in their hatred of gays and lesbians. Why would they vote for a man or a woman like Hillary who will bring in more of the people who will hate gays? Can anyone explain that to me?
I feel that I can. Basically what it is after the San Bernardino shootings, I don't understand why gays haven't armed up yet. I guess some of them have, but...
Well, you know, this is interesting. There's been a counter-revolution amongst the gay people after Orlando in the gay nightclub when the Muslims slaughtered them in the most horrible manner you can imagine. The media has covered up what they actually did to them. It was not just shooting. It was mutilation of human beings. There's a movement amongst gay people, actually, to buy guns. A huge movement for the Second Amendment amongst gays. That was an unexpected result of the Orlando massacre. It's something that Hillary never counted on.
I feel that it can be explained in two words, pathological altruism.
Well, where does the altruism apply when it comes to her uncle, you? She has no altruism for you.
Well, I mean, I guess not.
You mean for everybody on Earth, they have altruism for everyone on Earth except you?
Well, this is a phenomenon that's going on in Sweden right now. If you study Sweden, you'll see they're suffering from pathological altruism.
Oh, I know. I wrote a whole chapter in Scorched Earth entitled From the Iceman to the Nice Man. And I talk about that's a great chapter, how the descendants of the Vikings have become complete and total fruitcake patsies. Let me send you Scorched Earth. I think I'm going to read that when I come back, From the Iceman to the Nice Man. And you're getting a copy of that book, Mr. Eddie. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So in my book, Scorched Earth, there's a great chapter called From the Iceman to the Nice Man. And I talk about what happened to the descendants of the Vikings, especially in Sweden, where they've been deballed as a result of 30, 40 years of a nanny state and the progressives destroying the masculinity in the nation. I refer to I'm not going to read from him. I'm going to paraphrase because time is short. A show on the History Channel called The Vikings, which is an exception to everything that is wrong with the entertainment industry. It was amazing. Production, writing, astounding historical accuracy. Anyway, there's a scene of a bunch of kids in a Viking village throwing around some leather-wrapped toy that looked like a ball. And there's a little boy in a wagon who was brought out to watch them play. The little boy had been handpicked by his mother, who was married to the Viking chief, to be taught how to be a real Viking in the old days. All right. She wanted a ferocious son. So the little boy had a father who was a ferocious Viking who had adopted a Christian priest captured during one of their raids in England. And at first, the Vikings had treated the Christian priest as a slave. But eventually, the Christian priest preached Christianity to the Viking chief and in so doing weakened him. He became weak in the eyes of his own wife, a Viking woman who wanted a boy to be raised as a Viking, not as a weakling. So she secretly raised the boy to raise him as a Viking. All right, so during the scene, the kid is indoors being taught the Viking ways, and there's other little Viking boys outside playing with the ball. And then he's taken out in the cart, and the ball comes to the kid in the wagon, and it bounces out of his hand, and the other boys threw it back to the kid. So the kid holds on to it, and one of the other boys runs up and tries to take the ball out of the kid's hand. The kid grabs a stick or something, wraps the other boy over the head with it, and hits him, and breaks his head open, kills him. A little 3 or 4 year old boy just picked up something and smacked the boy in the head and killed him, broke his head open. The mother rushes out and holds him and says, don't worry, you didn't do anything wrong. Flash to the end of the show when there was an interview with the director-writer, who's a genius. He talked about the sequence, and he says, I wanted to show that the kid was being taught how to be a Viking without a conscience, and that he'd done a good job because he hit the boy. Now let's jump forward to ISIS. They have no conscience. They have no conscience whatsoever. But the difference between the ISIS subhumans and the Vikings is that the ISIS subhumans wrap their no-conscience subhumanity in a religion. Then they'll tell you it's the religion mumbo-jumbo that justifies their raping, killing of women and children, burying them alive, chopping off heads, setting them on fire. Mumbo-jumbo, mumbo-jumbo. Do you understand where I'm going with this? From the Iceman to the Iceman? Let's go to America. ISIS is training their children to have no conscience, to kill with no conscience. While here in America, we have people screaming about microaggression on college campuses. We have little boys being taught that what they are thinking is aggressing on minorities in some way. Little white boys being taken out of school for thinking about what they want to do with girls, for being boys. So my friends, ask yourself a question, as I do in Scorched Earth. Who will win this war, the Iceman or the Nice Man? Think about it. I will say right now that unless this insanity that is coming off the campuses and out of the psychotic left is resisted, we are finished. Not only as a society, Hillary, but as a nation, Hillary. We will disappear. Not only the deplorables, Hillary, but even your grandchild. We will disappear, Hillary. Do you know what you are creating? That's it for the day. Go to a bookstore, pick it up, buy it for a friend. I'll be back for another big hour. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
To his adorable, loving wife who was waiting for him. God. Well, she's stupid. She was waiting for him, you know, and she's cleaning the pool with the pool brush. And, you know, the loving wife can't wait to see him. He's been in Vietnam for a year, comes back shattered from the event. Meanwhile, he's visited by CIA agents who wanted to become an assassin for them. He turns him down. And his black buddy who fought in Vietnam with him, they came off the plane together from Nam. They were spit upon at the airport by the vermin who are now running America. You know, they go back to their wives and the families. They try to get jobs and readjust. And the black guy takes a rotten, stinking job in a factory making plastic seats. hates it. I mean, can't live on it. Terrible job, right? So the CIA guys come and visit the character, and they try to turn him into an assassin. He throws him out of the house. Get out of here. They go to the black guy. The black guy, you don't know what happened. You don't even know they went to him, but there's a bar scene where he's in a black bar with his friend. See, in those days, people got along a lot better than they do now. And the guy, this black friend, buys drinks for him and then starts buying drinks for everyone in the bar. He says, geez. He says, yeah. He says, you're in the NAM. You almost risk your life. You come back, they spit on you. You make a few dollars. And he said, suddenly you're a hero. Anyway, the other guy takes the money because it's $30,000. And the average income at that point for these guys was like $2,000-$3,000 a year, right? It's a lot of money. So he's seduced into becoming an assassin. So his friend goes to kill someone. He's the spotter across the street in an apartment. And as it turns out, they set the black guy up and they kill him. So this guy's so freaked out, he chases them down and this and that and whatever. And the whole story is about how people come back shattered from the war. No jobs, disrespected, can't adjust. You know, things have changed in America, haven't they? I mean, we really treat our Eddie veterans really well, don't we? Really well, especially when Hillary calls them the deplorables. Who do you think she was referring to? Who do you think Hillary was referring to at her gay and lesbian bacchanal the other night? You. You, the guy who came back from Afghanistan or Iraq. If you came back at all, or you're in a wheelchair, you're the deplorable. You're the, not George Soros' son, he's not deplorable. No. Not the friends of Chelsea Clinton, they're not deplorable. They live in fancy apartments. They're not deplorable. You're deplorable. But she wants your vote nevertheless. So that's why I say to you, the Eddies are multiracial. They cross all racial lines. This is really a class war that's going on right now in this election, not the race war that Obama's been conducting. You see, it's changed. I don't think anyone's described the change from Obama to Hillary. Obama's been running a racial war. Hillary's running a class war. That's her appeal, see? That's how she's doing it. So that's the opening to my show today. Just a few observations. We talked about a lot of stuff, and many of you are responding to that. I haven't read some of the other stories that caught my eye here. I got to read them, and then we'll go into your calls. I love the calls. I want the calls. I got to do the calls. And we'll talk amongst ourselves. Marine drill instructor accused of running a clothes dryer with a Muslim recruit inside. A Muslim Marine says he was called a terrorist and ordered into an industrial clothes dryer multiple times by a drill instructor, who then turned it on, according to investigative documents that describe the abuse of recruits at the services training center at Parris Island, South Carolina. So now, after they have homosexualized the entire military, feminized the Air Force and the Navy where they can hardly function, now they're going after the last thunderous division of the United States military, which are the Marines. They can't crack the Marines. So what are they coming up with, the vermin on the left? The evildoers who are funded by these strange emigres who have come here to destroy this country? Well, they're going after the Marines. So what do you go after them on their strengths? The tough training. That's how you take them down. You take a man down by his strength, the same as I try to show you what they did after World War II to a World War II hero named Senator McCarthy, who was a very brave, heroic tail gunner in World War II. What is a tail gunner? We're not talking about a guy who walks in the streets and looks at certain... I'm talking about a tail gunner. I'm talking about a man who manned the gun inside the back of a bomber in combat. He couldn't even move. I mean, he was a sitting target. It was the most dangerous position to have in the military in World War II, amongst them. He survived many missions, comes back, he's a hero, he becomes a senator. But because he championed an investigation of communists in Hollywood, in, you know, media, in academia, they called him Tail Gunner Joe. They tried to take his strength. His greatest strength was that as a tail gunner hero. So the liberal vermin of the time mocked him by taking his strength and apparently trying to make it a weakness. So they called him Tail Gunner Joe. And they made Americans laugh at this American hero to bring him down because he was on to them. So now, what are they doing? They're going after the one last branch of the military that still has very tough training, the U.S. Marine Corps. They've always been rough with people. How do you think they turn them into killing machines? How do you turn a man into a killing machine? You abuse him. You mentally break him down. You make him crazy. and then you rebuild them. That's what they do in a training camp. That's just what they do in a training camp. So now the psychopaths who have taken over the military under this putz, this putz Ashton Carter, the pink tie moron from MIT, a physicist they take, a Schmendrick. No military experience. He's running the military now, naming ships for Medgar Evers, naming ships for Harvey Milk. Astounding. Next will be a ship for Mao Tse-Tung. They'll want your boy to enlist in the Navy. Yeah, I'm on the USS Mao Tse-Tung next. Now they're going after the Marines for being too rough and abusive in their training, and they're investigating it. Details of the abuse have previously been reported. The investigative doctor described an environment which one unit is in particular on third recruiting training. Ethnic and gay slurs. Here we go. Again, gay. Gay, 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 gay. Everything is gay. Everything is gay, 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 gay. Everything revolves around one thing. Doesn't matter whether we need a Marine Corps to defend us. No. What matters is only one thing at all. We read ethnic and gay slurs were also used regularly. And drill and so what? What's the difference it makes a man into a harder killing machine? Isn't that the object of being a Marine? Not supposed to be training to be Mr. Rogers. So if he trained to go out there and break the other guy's neck and shoot him in the stomach and not feel a damn thing about it, that's what I mean when I talk about from the Iceman to the Nice Man. What will be left of this country after this monster gets out? I don't know what could be left. And God forbid if Grandma takes over, oh my God, forget about it. There'll be nothing left over. But a sack of weak garbage, vanilla in a sack. And my friends, I have an old chapter on this in Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama. It's a must book, a must read. So let's go now to the callers. I got an email from someone who took umbrage at my saying that Christianity also, at some point in its evolution, killed people who didn't convert. And this emailer says, Christianity never included killing anyone for not converting or coercing anyone to convert. There is no verse in the New Testament that directs people to kill other people. The Old Testament has that, and the Quran has that, but the Christian books, the New Testament of the Bible, does not. That is 100% correct, but it did not stop Christians in the Middle Ages from conducting the Inquisition, where they put people on the rack and stretched them until their spine snapped to make them confess that they were anti-Christian. There was an awful lot of violence committed in the name of Christianity until Christianity evolved out of that. That was the whole point, but don't deny reality or don't deny the reality of the past. So what I'm saying is Islamic people understand the educated people who are Muslims also want an evolution in their religion. I had a woman on the show, a Muslim scholar, who said that only a reformation could save Islam. And she's being hunted down by the maniacs. You understand what I'm saying to you? Islam needs to go through a reformation, she said, and she's a Muslim. And I believe her. Because I said the same thing. That's why I had her on the show. That's all. Next case. Now the callers. That's all. I guess we should do the Trump with the child care thing. Rosemary on KSFO. Go ahead. Trump and child care. What's your position?
My position is that to take a look at the child care, he's given a hands up. He's incorporating it with the tax plan to give incentives for in credit deductions for the child care. And for the elderly, he's got a savings plan in it where you can contribute it and it could automatically go into the plan. It's a hands up. Look what the government has done for decades. Given
Look, I don't want to get dragged into this because there are the never Trumpers who are using this as an excuse to say, see, he's a liberal. Then there are the defenders of Trump on the child care. Personally, I think it's horrible. I'm against it. I don't like government child care support in any way. It's the same thing as the liberals. How does it differ from a liberal program?
Because it's given an incentive for the child for supporting a working person, not to a federal program that supports you not working.
I understand your point of view, but from the other side of the big government, anti-big government movement, it certainly increases government, doesn't it, the size of government?
Just think what he's saying about unemployment insurance, how it's going to be tied.
Oh, wait, you're not answering me. Does it not increase the size of the federal government?
How can you? So it's like don't support a hands up to the working class because it's tied in to the federal government.
All right. So you're a Trump no matter what he does person. And that's good because people need to vote for him. And then we need to hold his feet to the fire and pray to God we can convert him into a social conservative after he becomes president, okay? I'm not going to argue with you, but there are counter-arguments, Rosemary. Is there anything Trump could do that would have you lose, that would have you not vote for him?
You can't.
Hello?
I could disagree with him on issues, but when it comes to the Supreme Court justices and what we need, he's got the right message. He's not perfect.
All right. So there's nothing he could do at this point because you're terrified of the opponent, right?
Yes.
All right, then I'm sending you scorched earth. You're an open-minded person. Stay on the line. That's, next case. Next case. What else is in the news? What time is it already? Third hour. Started out with, let's say, morning show on KSFO with Brian and Katie. That was a seven-shotter. 7:30. I don't know when anymore. Like a delirium. Then I did a Breitbart interview on Sirius Radio with Alex, a delirium, that we couldn't connect for 30 minutes. They had the wrong numbers for my ISDN unit. I had to sit here with like a Schmendrick engineer reading SPID numbers or PID numbers. I don't even know what they are. What do they call, Robert? SPID numbers? SPID? SPID. They had the wrong SPID numbers. Then we did a great 45 minutes. What an interview. It's going to be on Sirius Radio tomorrow, 7 in the morning. I guess I should mention it, not mention it. It's a great interview. Okay, then a collapse job, and then here I am, a three-hour job on this show. Nothing mild. And after the show is over, a breather, a toothbrush, a diet soda, and at 3:30, a KLIF interview. It's not enough for me. I need more. I need another interview at 5 o'clock, then 5:30. Then I'm going to a car show tonight at a local dealership. They have some racing cars. It's a beautiful life. It really is. So if you care to call the show, 855-407-282, back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Welcome back to the program. I think we should go right to the callers, okay? Where is she? She dropped just what I was going to take her from New York. Three bookstores in New York City, she couldn't find it. That's all. All right, look, let me give you a little phone number here. 855-407-282. We have one open line on the Savage Nation. And I really would like to hear people calling with their favorite passage from the book. I'd like to hear what you read, like what struck you as a line you're going to read to somebody. But instead, we'll go to callers. KSFO, Seth, on the military and weakness. Go ahead. What's on your mind, Seth?
Yeah, you brought up your point, Dr. Savage, about the Marine Corps and the problems, you know, they're talking about, you know, the training is too exertive and everything. But that's part of the problem. That's the thing I've been noticing for a while. I've been, you know, I was a veteran in the United States Army for, you know, 8 years. And over the course of my time, the basic training, just listening to the guys coming out of basic training, the things they're allowed to do is just getting progressively worse. There's a reason, you know, that they took away your cell phones. You weren't allowed to communicate otherwise through, you know, unless it was...
Of course, they're going after the most fundamental method of turning a boy into a man in a killing machine at that. He's not supposed to be a social worker when he comes out. He's supposed to be able to take a bayonet and stick in the enemy's guts instead of running home and screaming that he needs a hydration break.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what the army is for. It's to kill the enemy. Not to understand the enemy. Or they're going to get their guts cut out. I'm sending you scorched earth. Look, this is a tough thing for me. I got to tell you, you know, I had basic training in my childhood in my father's house. I had really good basic training. He really worked on me. That's why I am who I am today. Sometimes I resent it. You know, sometimes I wish he didn't. There are other ways to do it. I didn't do it to my kids, and they turned out fine. They can come out just as fine the other way. But the truth is, I know what it's like to be raised by an overbearing, let us say, drill sergeant type of father. He didn't let you get away with anything. He would drill me down. That's what I mean by a drill sergeant. If I fibbed about anything to him about, like, say, a test, he wouldn't let me just get out of the room. He'd break me till I started to cry. He would say, what did you just say? Tell me the truth. You know, like that. And a kid sometimes wants to lie to get out of it. He wouldn't let it. He would say the truth is the most important thing. Don't you lie to me. That kind of thing. Remember Robert De Niro in that movie? where he plays the tough stepfather up in Oregon with what was his name? DiCaprio plays the kid. De Niro is like the tough father, coming, you know, like the tough father type. Many people had that kind of guy as a father. It makes you into a different personality. You become stronger as a result. Of course you have your scars, so what? So what's the big deal? What are you supposed to be? Supposed to walk around like a rose in this world of ours? Filled with poisons everywhere you turn? You're not going to last too long if you're raised as a rose. You're not supposed to be a rose floating in the air winds. If you're a rose floating around in the winds of life, you know what you're going to wind up? That's all. So now they want to break the Marines now. They're a little too tough. The drill sergeants are too rough on the people. This is what I mean by a scorched earth policy being practiced by Barry the Madman Obama. You get it? I hope you do.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I love this show. I got to tell you, I'm so thrilled inside to be alive, number one. And at this stage of my life, to be knocking out a bestseller, it's astounding to me. This just came in from my publisher. You ready for this? I'm sorry to tell you, enemies, pay attention. All those who have predicted my demise, who have said that I would fail, who said I wouldn't make it in radio, who said that my voice was too New York to make it, that was in 1994. Who said that my books wouldn't... Scorched Earth is number one on the iTunes audiobook bestseller list. Congratulations. That's a big deal. I don't even read the audiobook because I can't read 80,000 words after doing a show. I don't know how to do it. But whoever does it, I mean, it's number one on the iTunes audiobook bestseller list. So that indicates people are responding to the message of Scorched Earth. That's great. That is great. The reason I don't read it is the voice goes. If I start reading my own books... on, you know, for audiobooks, it burns out the vokes. The vokes go. Right now, they're not marginal. Last night, I thought they were going to go. I was like, watching it very carefully. I had to, like, cultivate my vocal cords back to life. No yelling, no screaming. Couldn't yell at the dog. Nothing like that. I don't do that. He's good now. He didn't even throw up today. He's used to the show already. Oh, God. I just looked at myself on Skype. You know, I could see my own image. Like, I could see the two guys running the show in Dallas. There's Robert, runs the board. There's Jim answering the dumb calls. I'm just doing it. Jim, hello, Jim. So I could see them. They could see me. And I have my image of me on the Skype screen as I'm sitting here talking to them. I don't like what I see right now because my two front teeth, one of them is so thin, I know I'm going to need an implant in the next couple of years. The other one was implanted a few years ago. It was a cadaver. I told him no cadaver. I've been acting weird ever since he put it in. I didn't know it at the time. I said to the dentist, I said, no, I don't want cadaver. Get me plastic. So this took months to get it right. Turns out it was a cadaver. So I've always been, I don't know where the cadaver came from. Could have been a tranny junkie. I don't know. They say that deactivate the DNA in it, but who knows? So I got a cadaver bone on my right side. The other one's thin like a paper now. I think I'm going to pick the person out. I'm going to go down and look for the person whose tooth I want. Don't laugh. That day will come again in this country where people are going to go pick out the transplant person. Like, I want that kid's liver. Yeah, don't laugh. That's where we're going. The rich and the poor. And they do it now with the kidneys. Some of them are so horrible. I mean, they go to India. You see people, your heart could break. They're so poor that they give up a kidney for money because the family is starving to death. And the people buy it saying, well, okay, it's not me, someone else. And the guys who trade in the organs, I saw them in Israel, a lot of them. I'd hang them, frankly. The organ traders from a tree. From an old Jerusalem oak or in Jericho, I'd hang them, the organ traders. But the day will come back. We're leaving the two societies now. They'll actually go into some area and pick out a young kid. Someone will drive around like from Facebook. Who can buy like buildings and cities and towns and throw people in the garbage. They'll start driving around selecting individuals for their organs if this doesn't stop. See, I didn't even say Obama did it. He is getting skinny. I saw a close-up of the guy. He looks like he's having a new suit size made every month. The guy looks like he's got a 25-inch waist. Narrow, narrow, thin. What is going on with him? I'm worried. I mean, I don't like his politics, as you can pretty much know by now. But the man's thin, really skinny. What's going on with Obama? Health is now an issue with everyone. Trump, Hillary, talk shows are soon going to have to give out their medical records on air. Hey, by the way, I offered to. Remember I said I challenged anybody? I put out my health records any day. They're still good. No medication at my age. I love when I go to a doctor, right? The guy's facing the wall with a chart. They don't look at you anymore. Doctor comes in and says, hello. And he stands at the wall, looks at a chart. You're sitting there shivering on the paper, on the wrapper, like a bubble gum, naked in a horrible outfit. Why don't they change those hospital gowns to something, I mean, a little fashionable? You're sitting there on that paper. It's like toilet paper in a Port Authority building. Where they get that paper from? It feels like old toilet paper from the Port Authority building in the 1950s. It's like rough, crinkly paper. Shivering. There's never any heat in those room, doctors' examining rooms. Why are they so cold? And he doesn't look at you. He looks at the wall. How are you today, Mr. Sam? Very good. So what medications are you on? I see you're on, and there's nothing there. I said, none. I take an aspirin every night. I'm on multivitamins. I drink a lot. I take a lot of herbs. I worry a lot. I bicycle. And so far, so good, because there's a genetic component that you can't control with cholesterol medication, so therefore I won't take any statins. And whether it's from Staten Island or not, I don't care. I don't take them because they make my legs hurt. And I have horrible HDL, LDL. By definition of the HDL, LDL thing, a corpse, a goner. When it first started happening, it was upside down and backwards. I never saw anything like it. Your good cholesterol is bad. Your bad cholesterol is good. Take this, take that, do this, do that. Well, okay, I didn't, because I can't hurt my legs. So I'm just saying, it's a miracle. Just saying, miraculous. But I would release my medical records. I would release them in a minute if that's required. I think everybody in the media should release their medical records. I'd like to see what Wolf Blitz is on. I'd like to see how this psycho can get up in the morning and get up there and lie the way he does. I'd love to see what Jake Tapper's on. Man, I mean, legal, illegal, not him alone, all of them. Congress, pee in a cup. Number one, pee in a cup. First thing, you want to run for office? I want to see a urine test. I'd like to see Hillary's urine test. I want to see Donald Trump's urine test. If you go to work for a corporation, you have to pee in a cup. Why? They don't want a drug addict at work. You're operating in serious business. Or, let's say you're operating heavy machinery. You don't want guys on medication who can crash the truck or the pile driver. So, naturally, you pee in a cup. They send it out to the lab, comes back, you got drugs, you're finished. We know that, and we live with it, all of us who work. Why not Congress? They control us. Wouldn't you want to know what explains their insanity? Susan Collins of Maine? Man, I'd give a $10,000 bill to see that medical record. Wow, that would be a good one. Yeah, all the anti-Trumpers like to see their medical records. Please, submit your medical records, especially the psychoactive compounds you're taking. Hollywood, are you joking? What they're on? 99% of the people in Hollywood, the biggest names you know, in the director's side, are manic depressives. They're on medication. They're happy when they're with people, when they're at a party, socializing, red carpet, thrilled. When they're alone, they're ready to go off the L.A. bridges. They're ready to throw themselves into a funnel. They don't know what to do. So they try every kind of medication known to mankind. Depressed all the time. It doesn't mean you can't be successful. Look, manic depressives have been with us since the beginning of time. The question is, what do you do when you're in the depressive side of the cycle? I mean, anyone can deal with the manic side if it's not overbearing. In the manic side, you can do anything. You can take on the world. Then when the limelight, the spotlights go off, bow, you ask any entertainer. It's a very, very important story I never talked about. I shouldn't be, because it has nothing to do with anything I'm talking about. But it's interesting to me. Therefore, it might be interesting to you, because I saw it happen right down the street from me. When the guy is in front of the camera as happy as can be. When he's no longer in the limelight, depression, uncontrollable depression, which yields to results in many cases, physical ailments. Physical ailments emerge when the psyche and the spirit start to get, you know, depressed. We know that. Depression's a killing disease. I'm not laughing at it. But the thing I'm trying to say is that people commit suicide when they're depressed. And we know that for a fact, too. Nothing new about that. But they're running the country. How many of our congressmen and senators are insane and on medication, just barely propped up every morning? What would you give to see some of these women women? I'm picking on women right now, just because I picked on the men enough. Pick your favorite woman congresswoman. who you know is a whack job, completely through and through insane. Even when they're drugged up, when they've been titrated, they're insane. They come out like this. Why I run the cuckoo clock. Robert, play the cuckoo clock so they know what I'm talking about. There's a few congresswomen, when they give speeches, we play the clock behind her. Because you know that they got her up in the morning. Like six doctors probably had to adjust the cocktail by 10 a.m. to get her to give the speech. And then they give the speeches. They make no sense. But they get reelected. They become speakers of this, speakers of that. They go to the B'nai B'rith. They give a speech. They get another prize. Then they go to the ADL. They get yet another prize. They put Israel down. They put Jews in danger. The ADL rewards them. I never saw anything like the country I'm living in. See what I'm saying? That's what I run. That's what I run because the country's crazy. Especially the ruling class. They're all nuts. 400 people ruling 350 million of us. Think about that. 400 psychos ruling 350 million people. How do they do that? How could 400 maniacs rule 350 million people? Can anyone explain that to me? Intimidation, the greatest surveillance state in America, in world history. Obama, the nice man. Oh, you're the nice man, nice guy. Oh, really gentle, nice family man. Created the greatest surveillance state in the history of the world. Ask the liberals. They know that. They were shocked that he did it. How do they do it? They scare the hell out of you. They make everyone think that they're being watched, looked at, arrested. How many times have I told you we're all one mistake away from going to prison? Raise your hand if you remember that. You remember it. Am I wrong or am I right? There are people who call the show in a hot second. If I said to you, did you make one mistake and go to jail? I don't mean killing someone. That's an obvious. You make one white-collar mistake and you're a step away from going to prison. There are people who committed misdemeanors who were still in prison 8 years later. Do you know that? They could indict a ham sandwich. This attorney general could indict a ham sandwich if she wanted to. Okay, so you're living in a criminalized society run by drug addicts. It reminds me of the Hitler regime. You found out they were all like crack addicts in that time. Do you know they were on crystal meth? Did you know that? Yeah, it came out in the History Channel. I knew that for years ago. I mean, I knew the Americans did the same thing in order to have their flyers work around the clock, night missions in particular. They were on speed. Okay, that's understood, but they had to make up for the Germans. They were on meth. That's how the supermen could stay in the battlefield for 2 days without sleep. Well, the Hitler youth, they're on meth. They give them little tablets in the field. Did you know that? I bet you didn't know this. They were drugged up. So then the Americans were like, how to keep up? So they gave their pilots Benzedrine, and they were flying on Bennies. Like, I don't mean like stuff like for the nose that people get and like break open and throw in a tea. I'm talking about the real McCoy. But the fact is that how many of our 400 leaders are drug addicts? And why should we not, since this is an issue, Hillary brought the issue up. The issue is medical now, medical. Everything's medical. Now we all want to know her medical records. So her doctor quack, oh, she's fine, she's getting better, she's hydrated, she's resting comfortably, she's fit as a fiddle, she'll be back to work in a moment to continue her road to save America from itself. To restore us from the progressive policies of Iraq. No, not the progressive. From the horrible Republicans who did not let Obama finish his job. That only if those evil Republicans had died, every last one of them should drop dead. And there shouldn't be another party. Only when we have a single party system with one strong woman ruling over America can we have the true, beautiful America that we've all dreamed of since the beginning of time. She is fine. She is healthy. She is feeling well. She's recovering well. She is resting well. She's eating Snapple. She's drinking Skittles. She is feeling terrific. She never felt better. She's looking out the window. She sees the people. She waves at them. She has never felt better. She's more fit than ever. She had nothing wrong with her whatsoever. Although she fell, she didn't fall. That was not a shoe that fell off her foot. That was an anomaly. That was a small rodent coming out of a sewer in New York. As you know, we have a problem here with rodents in New York. People are saying a shoe fell off. That is not true. That was not her shoe. That was a rodent that came out of a sewer. People are lying. Those right-wing conspiracy, those untouchables, conspiracy people, those evil, dysfunctional, deplorables are saying it was a shoe that fell off. She was not dragged into that car. She was not thrown in like a slab of meat. That is an anomaly of the right wing that distorted the imagery of her walking with dignity into that van. And she is doing fine, and she will be back soon to take over America.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All right, time is so short. I have only a few minutes left. We have a great caller on KSFO on line one, Charvin. What's your story, Chauvin? What's going on?
Yeah, so I went to the Barnes & Noble's yesterday, and I picked up three copies of your books. I went to the local pub, passed two of them out, and while I was reading and listening to your show yesterday, a guy didn't like the cover of your book, so he tried to headbutt me, so I had to slam him into the wall. Yeah, he tried to...
Oh, not, so you must be one of the deplorables. You must be one of the Eddie you must be one of the Eddie deplorables. Can you tell us what bar you were in?
Old Town Tavern, Frederick, Maryland.
So you're just reading a book and a guy headbutts you? A guy comes over and hits you?
Well, I was sitting there reading the book, listening to your show. He started running his mouth about, you know, the cover of the book where it says Obama and this and that and the other. He tried headbutting me. So, yeah, I had to defend myself. I'm not going to put up with that.
Did you come? Were you trained at Parris Island as a youth?
No, I wasn't. I tried to join the military. They wouldn't take me because I didn't graduate high school.
But you were raised a pretty tough. You had a tough life, I would assume.
Yeah.
Where did you learn how to fight?
On the street.
Well, I'm honored that I have such warriors out there fighting the good fight. I'm not recommending people fight for me, but
one good kick to the nose, you have to learn how to defend yourself after that.
All because you were reading a book, some guy tried to hit you? That's great. What an America Obama has created. Isn't that nice to see how fair-minded the other side is, Chauvin?
Pardon?
Well, my friend, I'm going to send you a copy of Scorched Earth so you can put it over your heart, inside your jacket, in case someone tries to knife you in the heart. It's thick enough to prevent the knife. I'm joking. No, things are happening. Yeah, gentleman, that thin, gentle president. He's unleashed the monster in America. Unleash the monster. But we don't want to go there right now. I don't want to do it. Well, it's been a hard day's night, I got to tell you. And it's been a hard, It's been a hard day's night. No, it's been a hard night's day. And it's been a long day. And so it's only starting for me. I got another interview right after the show. I'll rest for 15 minutes and then do another interview right after on the great KLIF in Dallas. I'm looking forward to talking about my book with the great audience that follows mine on that station in Dallas. And then, tomorrow, banned, blacklisted by Fox News. We don't even mention the alphabets. You'd think Fox News would say, look, he's a competitor to Bill. He's got to do another killing book. He's only done 15 of them. I mean, who's left to kill? I mean, the ultimate killing book is like Kill Bill. And we're not going to ask for that to happen. Be a big seller, though. I mean, if I were in that series doing that kind of thing, are you kidding? The ultimate book in that series would be a guy to write Kill Myself and then jump off a building, but no one's recommending that. How could you write books about killing things and people buy it, that line up around the block for it? I'm not complaining. It's why I'm blacklisted at Fox News. I finally figured it out. It's a form of monopoly, anti-competition by the big one. That's my estimation. What would you say? Why am I blacklisted? Because Megan doesn't like my hairstyle?